Edius, Perikhei, Mishnah Base 5-2. This Mishnah follows in the same pattern as the previous, meaning here we have Rabbi Yosi, who's going to add six machloks in between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, where Beis Shammai is lenient and Beis Hillel is machmir. He's coming to add to the 24 of the fourth parak. He's coming to disagree with Rabbi Yehuda of the previous Mishnah regarding what is added. Rabbi Yosi is not part of the consensus, meaning this, it's a das yachid, an individual's opinion, as is the case of the older Mishnah is here in this parak, and therefore halach will not be like him, meaning these machloksim did exist, but Beis Hillel will actually be the lenient opinion, and the halach will go like Beis Hillel in that case, as it always is the case. So here, it's a challenge to put all six of these cases of our Mishnah here into one brief recording, but let's do our best. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Rabbi Yosi said, Shisha Devar Mekule Beis Shammai Mechumrei U Mechumrei Beis Hillel. There are six other additional machloksim where Beis Shammai are the lenient and Beis Hillel are the machmer. The first is talking about restrictions regarding fowl and dairy. As you know, the Torah says, Lo sevashel gdi b'chalev imo. Three times the Torah says, you may not cook a kid, meaning a baby goat, in its mother's milk. The three-time repetition, Chazal understands, to teach three separate Isura and Doraisa. The first is you actually can't cook kosher mammals like cows, goats, sheep, and the like, with milk, dairy products. That's the first Isser. The second is not to eat dairy and meat that have been cooked together. And the third is not even to get benefit from dairy and meat cooked together, meaning if you accidentally cooked some meat and milk together, you can't feed it to your dog because you'd be saving money on the dog expenses. So those are three separate Isser, Doraisa. Now we have Midarabanan. The rabbis added, first of all, that we shouldn't eat meat and dairy together, even if they're not cooked together. That's just a Durabanan. In fact, they say we should space it out into separate meals and wait between the meat and the milk. That's one Durabanan. A second Durabanan is they extended not just to basar, the meat that comes from animals, like mammals, cows, goats, and sheep, and the like. They also extend it rabbinically to also poultry, fowl, meaning bird meat, like chicken and the like, kosher birds. Midarabanan cannot be eaten with milk, lest one come to eat the actual meat. In addition, they made another din derabanan, which is you may not even put meat and dairy on the table at the same time. Now, the reason for that din derabanan is because you could take your boiling hot beef stew off the stove, put it on the table, and if it directly comes in contact right away with cheese on the table, you'd actually be cooking meat and dairy together, since the bubbling pot of stew is still considered a kli rishon, and you would be over in Issur d'oraisa, the Issur of cooking them together, and therefore we shouldn't even put them on the same table at the same time. Now, the rabbis did say that you can't eat fowl and poultry, meaning bird, and meat together, but they didn't make an Issur against cooking them together. They just didn't think it was very likely to cook them together. They didn't extend it that way. Just can't eat it. So the question our mission wants to answer is, are you restricted from putting fowl, poultry, on the table with dairy products or not? Beis Shammai is lenient. He says it's not a problem because he says, listen, even if you would come to put your chicken and cheese on the table at the same time, even if you eat them together, so big deal. You're only a minister derabanan, okay? And we don't do a gezerah de gezerah. We don't put a rabbinic enactment, don't bring it to the table, unless you come to eat it, when only eating it is also just derabanan. But Beis Hillel are strict, according to Rabbi Yosi, and they say, listen, the concern is, if you come to put your hot chicken stew on the table when there's cheese there, not that you might come to eat them together, but that you might come next time to bring hot beefs on the table, and you would cook meat and dairy together, which is Issur d'oraisa. Therefore, they say it's not a gezerah de gezerah, it's one gezerah to protect you from doing Issur d'oraisa. And therefore, Beis Hillel hold, according to Rabbi Yosi, it's forbidden to put dairy and poultry on the table at the same time. That's the first case. The Mishnah, inside the Mishnah, reads as follows. Ha'of ola im hagvina al hashulchan. The poultry can go on the table with the cheese, meaning dairy products. Ve'enu ne'echal, but you can't eat them together. You can't eat fowl and dairy together. Kedivrei Beis Shammai, that's Beis Shammai's opinion. Those are eating as this is a rabbanon, and you can't do it, but putting on the same table is not restricted. Ubeis Hillel omrim eino ole ve'enu ne'echal. They say, nope, not only you can neither bring it to the same table, lest they you next time you bring meat and dairy on the same table and they cook together, and that's a doraisa, that's a one level, a siyag, a protective fence, lest you do doraisa, and you certainly can't eat them together. You can't eat, you know, cheese on your chicken, lest you come to eat cheese on your meat. Okay. That was cooked together, you understand? Cheese on meat that was cooked together, hot cheese, hot meat, whatever. Okay, that's case number one. The second case of the Mishnah is talking about restrictions on tithing produce. So everyone agrees that you cannot take one species tithes from one species on behalf of another, meaning if you have olives and grapes, you can't give like extra olives and give no grapes to the Kohen as a truma. No, you have to take a portion of the olives for the olives and a portion of the grapes for the grapes. Straightforward enough. Now, that would also extend to, let's say, if you have grapes and wine, because grapes and wine are considered to be the same min, the same type, or you have olive oil and olives. Now, the question is there a separate problem? And Beis Hillel, the strict opinion according to Rabbi Yossi, says there is a separate problem, which is that one is required to take his tithes only from produce which has nigmar malacha, it already had been finished being processed. So no more work to be done. According to Beis Hillel, let's learn from a pasuk. The pasuk in the context of Trumas Meiser says, "V'nechshav lachem Trumas Chem," that Trumas Meiser will be considered "kedagan min hagoren," like the grain that had been already threshed and winnowed at the threshing floor. The idea is that from there, it says Beis Hillel, you're not supposed to take Trumas Meiser's tithes prior to finishing the processing of the particular foodstuff you're working with. That being the case, if you are making wine, so to take grapes on behalf of wine, well, they're the same min, the same type of food, the problem is the grapes haven't yet had nigmar malacha. The stance we're talking here about grapes that are destined to become wine. So therefore, it's not right, says Beis Hillel, to take grapes to exempt, the, you know, on behalf, tithing on behalf of the wine, because the grapes haven't had gemar malacha yet. Beis Shammai doesn't hold to that drasha, so he says you can do it lachadchila. Lahalacha, everyone agrees that Bidi Eved, if one did take tithes from produce that hadn't been finished being processed, like Nigmar Malacha, then Bidi Eved, the tithing still does in fact work. Okay, that's the backstory of this case. The Mishnah inside it says, Tormin Zaysim al Shemen, you may take a tithe of olives on behalf of exempting olive oil. Va'anavim al yain, and similarly, you could take a tithe of grapes to give to the Kohen al yain to exempt the wine. Kedivrei Beis Shammai, that's Beis Shammai's opinion, who's lenient. Ubeis Hillel omrim ein tormin. Beis Hillel say, no, you may not, because of the separate restriction of tithing things that had in Gemara Malacha, based on his limit of that pasuk. The third case of the Mishnah is talking about Kilai Hakerem, which is a prohibition from the Torah against planting grains, tavua, or greens, irakos, with grape vines. So there is a difference if, in terms of the distance one has to put between his grains or grains and the vine, if it's a single vine or even a group of vines, or some which has the status of a kerem. A kerem is a vineyard. So we have a machlokas. Everyone agrees you need to have at least five vines to constitute a vineyard, but according to Beis Shammai, they can be five vines in a single row, whereas Beis Hillel hold it needs to be four of the vines have to essentially be the four corners of a rectangle, specifically, you know, lined up perpendicular, the lines that they make, and the fifth one has to be on one of those lines, yotza zanav, like a tail, if you will. So you basically have three and two, but two and two are parallel one to the other. Now, if it's just a vine, or it's not a, more correctly, if it's not a vineyard, not a kerem, so then the distance one has to keep is one amma, six tefachim. But if a person has a someone which constitutes a vineyard, a kerem, so he has to distance his grains or greens from the entire Avodas HaKerem, the work area around the vineyard, which is a distance of 4 amos perimeter. If one violates this and he plants his grains or greens within that work area of the Kerem, so then the Kerem becomes forbidden. Pen tikdash, lest it become forbidden. Hamaleya hazera asher tizra, the fullness of the seed that were planted there in that perimeter. Utvuas hakerem, as well as the produce of the kerem. So it means that the whatever you plant there, the grains and greens that are close, too close to the kerem, all has to be destroyed. Now, tvuas hakerem is a singular, of a, like a singular vineyard. So if one plants not within a kerem, but on the perimeter of a kerem, a vineyard, so then essentially one kerem, quote-unquote, has to be destroyed. So according to Beis Shammai, a single row of 5 vines constitutes a kerem. And therefore, if you have, like, say, like a 5x5 grid of grapevines, but on the east side, let's say, you put within 4 amos of the most eastern row of 5, you put a grains or greens, you plant them there. So then, now the grains or greens are forbidden if they grow together, as well as that outer row, just the eastern row of 5 vines, because those are the single kerem that's closest to the grains or greens, assuming that the second closest is more than 4 amos away. Okay? But Beis Hillel, who hold that a kerem needs to essentially be 2 by 2 1/5 in one of those lines, means that it has to be 2 rows worth. And therefore, if you plant within, let's say, just within 4 amos of the eastern side of this 5x5 vineyard, you'll have to lose not one, but 2 rows, the 2 most eastern rows of vines, because a kerem, a singular kerem, has to have 2 rows, not just one, according to Beis Hillel. So therefore, his stricture is you're going to lose 2 rows instead of 1 row, and that's what the Mishnah's focusing on. I should point out that, of course, this opinion that it's 2 rows instead of 1 row also makes for a leniency, because if you have, say, 5 rows of five vines in a single row, so then according to Beis Shammai, he'll be lenient. I'm sorry. Beis Hillel will be lenient and say you could plant anything more than 1 am away because it's not a kerem. Whereas Beis Shammai, who holds it is a kerem, will be strict, so you have to distance it 4 am. So there's a stricture leniency here, but in any case, then the halach will be that it has to be 2x2 1/5 yotze zanav extending. But in any case, here our Mishnah says inside as follows: Hazareya arba amos shebekerem. One plants within 4 amos of the work area of a kerem, something which constitutes a kerem. Then Beis Shammai omrim, Beis Shammai, who's lenient, says kidesh shura achas. One single row of vines becomes forbidden. Beis Hillel omrim kidesh shtei shuros. Beis Hillel say no, since a vineyard, a kerem has to be 2 rows. That you lose 2 rows, have to be destroyed. Therefore, he is the machmer opinion. The fourth case of the Mishnah has to do with the separation of challah from the dough to give as a gift to the Kohen. The pasuk says, "V'haya ba'achalchem milechem aretz," and it shall be when you eat from the bread of the land, "Tarimu teruma l'Hashem." You'll separate a truma, a gift, to Hashem, which is given to the Kohen. Now, the question is, what constitutes lechem? Lechem certainly is made of one of the 5 grains mixed with water into some kind of batter and then cooked. The question is, does it have to specifically be baked or can it be cooked as well? The case would be me'isa. So the case, the particular type of food that the Mishnah is referring to is me'isa, which is, according to the Bavli, you basically take boiling water and you pour flour into the boiling water and stir it, and it makes kind of like a paste. Okay? Does that count as lechem that you'd have to separate from that dough to give to a Kohen? Yerushalmi, by the way, understands that it's the boiling water that's poured onto the flour. Either way, Beis Shammai here is lenient and says that doesn't constitute lechem, and therefore there's no need to take challah. That's leniency. Whereas Beis Hillel say, no, that's also called lechem. You're cooking flour and water together, flour from the 5 grains, and therefore, in fact, you must take challah before you eat it. Therefore, he is stringent. Inside the Mishnah says, Hame'isa, when it comes to this paste, Beis Shammai potrin, Beis Shammai exempting it from taking challah. You have no way to know that outside of context, but that's what it's talking about. Uvesil mechayvin, Beis Hillel say, no, it's obligated in the separation of challah as well. So therefore, he is the strict opinion. The fifth case of the Mishnah has to do with tevilas kelim. Now, the backstory is as follows. The pasuk says, "Ach ma'ayan uvor mikve mayim yeh tahor," which means ultimately that there are two ways in which you can purify mitaher things. One is in a ma'ayan, which is a flowing spring, a natural spring that comes out of the wall or ground, and the second is a mikve mayim, a gathering of waters. Okay, that means it was rainwater which now is pooled. If it's not a ma'ayan, meaning it's not spring water, rather it's rainwater, and it hasn't yet pooled, it's just flowing, it's called zochlin, it's flowing, it is not acceptable for tevila. Okay, now in addition, there's a rule when it comes to a bore, a mikveh mayim, a collection of, the bore means the pit in which the mikveh is gathered, but the point is, wherever it's pooled as a mikveh, it must have at least 40 sa'ah, which is roughly 750 liters, give or take, of water. Now, our Mishnah wants to know what happens if you have a flow going down like the side of a river, or if you live on a, if you've ever been on like a steep street, you can see this, it's raining, and then the rain builds up, makes like a little temporary, I'll call it a river, going down the side of the mountain. It's temporary. There's a word for this in Hebrew, it's a strange word in the Mishnah, it's chardalis, and the Rambam gives it etymology, maybe it's like the word like har and dalis, whatever, a mountain that's like, you know, bucketing water. There actually is a technical word for this in English too. It's called a sheet flow, a single word, S-H-E-E-T-F-L-O-W, but probably not a very familiar word to you. In any case, the point is, the question is, may one be tovel in the sheet flow as it goes down the side of the mountain? This is rainwater that's flowing. Now, certainly, okay, we're not asking about tovel your person because it won't be enough depth to cover you as a person, but what about your kelim? Can you tovel your kelim in such a sheet flow, the chardalis? So now, since it's rainwater, which is zochlin, it's flowing, the answer ostensibly would be, of course not. How could you? It's not a mikveh, it's not a pooling of water. However, there is a tosefta, a precedent, which is, if you have, say, like in a bay in the ocean, okay, so that's a big pool of water, and you could be tovel on that. What happens if there's a wave? So the wave kind of is moving through the water as it's like, you know, crashing on the shore. And can you be tovel in that? So the din is, yes, you can. So the question is, can we somehow analogize the sheet flow, the chardalis, to the moving wave on the ocean? So Beis Shammai, who's going to be lenient, says, yes, you can. It's connected. And this is very specific, if you have at the bottom of the mountain, this is how the Ravid explains it, if you have at the bottom of the side of the mountain where the sheet flow is going, you have a pool, the water's pooling over there. Now, even if that pool isn't 40 sa'ah total in pooled water, but the total volume of water which is connected, including both the pooled water at the bottom of the mountain as well as the sheet flow going like on the side of the mountain, if that all adds up together to being more than 40 sa'ah, so then Beis Shammai says this is analogous to being like a wave on the ocean. It's moving water, but it's connected to a pool at the bottom, and therefore you could be tovel in it. Beis Hillel are strict and say, no, you can't. The reason why is because they differentiate between like a wave in the bay and the sheet flow coming down the side of the mountain, even if it's pooling at the bottom, because when it comes to wave in the bay, you have an existing mikveh mayim, a gathering of water, and the wave is coming from that. It just, you know, it's like jiggling inside the bay, if you will, but it's already part of the mikveh mayim. Whereas the sheet flow, the chardalis coming down the side of the mountain, is not yet part of, not into and collected in the mikveh, not in the pooled water yet. It's not, its source isn't the pool of water. It's filling up that pool of water. And therefore, Beis Hillel say, no, it doesn't work. You can't be tovel even kelim, even if you have 40 sa'ah in total. In the sheet flow, the chardalis part of it, it has, you know, period. It has to be in a mikveh mayim. That's considered to be zochlin. It's still considered to be flowing water since it's flowing to and not from the pooling of water. Inside the Mishnah says, matbilin b'chardalis. You can immerse vessels for tevila purposes to be matahar them, whatever it is. Not just tevila kelim like we do the first time, but in the time of the Mishnah, of course, you need to remove tumah also. So you could tovel your kelim also in a chardalis, in the sheet flow. Kedivrei Beis Shammai, that's Beis Shammai's lenient opinion. Beis Hillel omrim ein matbilin. Beis Hillel say, no, you can't, for the reasons I explained before. The sixth and final case, the Mishnah, has to do with tumas meis, exposure to tuma from a corpse, as it applies to converts to Judaism. So the basic idea is that tuma doesn't apply to non-Jews. Let me clarify. That means that a midoraisa, they're not subject to tuma. They can't become tame if they touch a dead body. If they're in need and the like, we said midoraban, we treat them as tame, but midoraisa, they can't receive tuma. Their corpses, like Jewish corpses, do convey tuma. There's a machlokas rishonim if it conveys via ohel. But the point is, while a non-Jew is alive and he's a non-Jew, he really can't become tame. So the question is, what happens if a person is a prospective convert? He is, you know, he gets exposed to a corpse, whatever, he buries somebody the day before Pesach. Then he converts to being Jewish, let's say on the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach. Now he's a chiv to participate in the Korban Pesach like every other Jew. But the problem is, he was exposed to a corpse early in the day. Now normally, if a Jewish person is exposed to a corpse, so then there's a 7-day period that in which you have to use the mechatas and like to become tahor, and therefore a person who's exposed within 7 days of Pesach to tumas meis would not be able to participate in the korban Pesach, assuming that that's not the case for the majority of Klal Yisrael, whatever. So the question is, do we have a din derabanan that says that there has to be a special 7-day tahara process for a Gentile who's now a Jew, who we know was exposed to corpse tumah while he's a Gentile, to be mitahar him before he enters the Beis HaMikdash or eats from Kadshim? And the thought would be why that should be the case is if we have this, you know, this Gentile, you know, he's Chris this morning, he was digging graves. Now he converts to becoming Jewish, and now he's a Jew, and that night he's going to be at the Pesach Seder. So people say, listen, how can he be the Pesach Seder? Or they'll say, listen, I saw Chris at my Pesach Seder the night after he was digging graves. So you could be Tameh and Tumas Meis, or go to the mikvah, whatever the story is, and eat from Kadshim. You might make that mistake. So Beis Shammai say, we're lenient, nothing doing. The Gentiles not subject to Tumah Tahara. If they convert, so then now they're good to go. It may be, to convert, you have to do two stages, basically. If you're a male, one is you have to get a bris milah, and number two, you go to the mikvah and accept upon yourself the mitzvahs. But the point is, the mikvah immersion after the circumcision is essential to becoming a convert. It may well be you need to do a separate immersion to permit yourself to eating kachim. There's a sugya, which is not really for now at all, that you have to have kavana when you do your immersion, especially for eating kachim and so on. But whatever it is, after a second immersion at least, at most I should say, the convert now is totally tahor, he's a Jew, and there's no vestige of tumah from before. Therefore, he could eat at the korban Pesach that night. Beis Hillel say no. If we let that happen, people will come to eat. Jews will come to eat kachim betumah, and therefore we have to force this convert to wait 7 days and go through the tara process midrabanan with the third and seventh day being sprinkled with the mechatas and the like. Yeah, that's the backstory of the Mishnah. Inside the Mishnah says like this: Gershon is Geyer Arve Pesachim. If you have a convert who converted on Erev Pesach, Beishame Omrim Tovel Vaochel Es Pischol Arev. Beishame say no problem, let him go to the mikvah. Again, this may be like the second tevila in preparation for eating kachim, but fine. Vaochel Es Pischol Arev. He's allowed to eat his Korban Pesach that night, because even though he was exposed to corpses prior to his conversion, that doesn't stick because he's not subject to tumah because he's not Jewish. But Beis Hillel omrim haporish mina orla kaporish mina kever. Beis Hillel say no. Literally means one who separates from the foreskin, the orla. It's like you separate it from the grave. That is to say, the same way you separate from the grave, you're tummy for 7 days at a minimum. So to the convert who converts, we treat him as being tummy for 7 days minimum. Then he has to go through the tahara process like every other Jew after he's Jewish for 7 days. And then after that point, he'll be able to eat kachim, go to the Beis HaMikdash. Again, the idea is it's a din derabanan to protect Jews from making a mistake. Now, one PS to this, although there is an expression of like porish mina orla, separating from the orla, where that's not to be taken literally. Meaning, if you have a Jew, a good old-fashioned Jew, who wasn't for whatever reason up to now circumcised, and he circumcised himself like an Erev Pesach, he definitely could eat from the Korban Pesach that night. Then we're talking about, not talking about Tumah Tahara in terms of Tumas Mace. We're just saying, listen, the fact that he was uncircumcised, an Arel, an uncircumcised person, cannot eat from a Korban Pesach, but once he's circumcised, he's immediately eligible. So when the Mishnah here says, Porish Mina Orla Kaporish Mina Kev, we mean a non-Jewish person who converts from the day that he got circumcised. It's like a minimum of a seven-day process before he can become Tahor. Wouldn't apply to Jews who got circumcised on the eve of Pesach.